to another episode of Journey to the Rise. I'm your host, Lucretia. In today's episode, we talk with Sharon Barnes, a sign language interpreter and newly self-published author of Shanghai Sunset. Sharon shares with us her 16-year journey to making her dream come true. Long nights, endless edits have taken her to where she can finally hold her hard work in her hands in the form of a published book. We get her insight on the relentless passage that brought her to these characters, the story, and how they helped give her inspiration for her next book. Sharon doesn't hold back, and I don't want to wait any longer, so let's get moving in this episode. Please welcome Sharon Barnes. Today we talk with a woman who initially wanted to pursue traditional end of going publishing with her book, but decided that self-publishing was a better path to make her manuscript into a dream and have her book, Shanghai Sunset, become her reality. And we get to hear about her journey today. Sharon, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being patient with all the technical stuff.
It's absolutely perfect. And I think what a great intro that I can break your technology.
Right? I love it. New adventures for us all. So I always like starting the conversation with finding out where people, like their home base. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Erin, Tennessee, which is a really small town in Tennessee. It's very rural. I was probably one of the only native in our town besides my parents. So it was kind of isolating at times.
Oh, wow. Were you involved with you've been active in like powwows and different things. Was that a family tradition to be part of that?
My dad started taking me to powwows when I was really, really young. In the 1980s, he bought me a book that was about Native American legends and folklore.
Oh,
and
wow.
So that got me interested in folklore from around the world, and I let somebody borrow my book and I never got it back. And that was the last year it was in print.
Oh, no.
So I've been to reservations looking for a copy of the book. I've been to powwows looking for the book. I can't find it.
Oh no. What's the name of it?
It was just Native American folklore, and it was all different tribes. So like the Iroquois and the Cherokee and just every tribe out there, like different legends they had. And like I said, it was out of print. And if you hear somebody running around, it's my crackhead dog, my Jack Russell Chihuahua mix. And she's mad because I won't give her my chicken and rice.
Well,
so she's huffing and puffing at me, running around in circles. So I do apologize if you hear heavy breathing. It is not me. It is the rat.
It's okay. We've had a variety of animals make an appearance on the podcast, so all are always welcome.
Yeah, she's... So I'm checking my cup to make sure before I raise it up that it's not a cup that a friend of mine gave to me that knows me quite well, and it says, F off, I'm writing. And it's on both sides, so I can't hide it. So I'm like, did my son just give me my F off cup? It's not.
That's a great coffee mug. I love it.
She gave it to me for Christmas, and she goes, you have to open it. Like, I saw it and knew it was you. And when I pulled it up, I busted out laughing. I was like, that is so me. Thank you.
That's perfect. So a lot of the powwows, was there anything else in your childhood or your upbringing that helped you become of who you are today?
Yeah, quite a bit. When I was about 9, 10, I was almost kidnapped.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, me and my girlfriend, we lived about 2 miles away from each other, and a car pulled up really slow toward my driveway, and I was riding my bike. And when I got an uneasy feeling, I turned and came back up, and I ran in the house and called my girlfriend, and she goes, you're not going to believe this, but I had a car similar do the same thing to me. We both were almost kidnapped because several girls went missing around that time, and the description of the car was the cars was the cars that had pulled up to both of our houses. So that kind of shaped my life to knowing that there's evil out there. But when I was six, a lady went missing, and her name was Kathy Nishiyama, and she was a college student, and she was driving through Dixon, and she got pulled over. She thought it was by a police officer, and it was actually an inmate who had been given the responsibilities of detailing the car, and he stole the cruiser and pulled her over and killed her. Found her skull a mile away from my house. Oof. So when her name came up on the TV, my mom couldn't say her name, and I immediately could say it. And I told my mom at that time, I said, she's dead. They found her remains. But one of her bones was found in my yard. It was her femur bone that was found in our yard. A dog had brought it in. That made me want to tell the story of the bone. Like, how did it get here? Right. And immediately got a typewriter and started trying to type out this story at six. And of course, you know, it didn't go very far. But those were a couple of things that shaped my life. But my dad believed in culture and language, and he preached that because he's retired military. And he would always, but my dad was having flashbacks from Vietnam when I was growing up. So I was taught at six how to kill, and I was taught at seven how to shoot. Wow. So that kind of shaped me to be a very strong, independent person. And he wasn't doing it to be mean. He was trying to teach me to protect myself.
Right.
And, you know, nothing like eating soup at the table and your dad going, "Do you see the spoon? Can you kill a man with a spoon?" And I'm like, "I just want to eat my soup. I'm going to say yes, but whatever."
Yeah.
And the answer was, yes. Yes, you can kill a man with a spoon. And, you know. So that was my childhood growing up. So a lot of craziness and a lot of fun, and it's just who I am.
Right. That's incredible. Like, and how wonderful for your dad to take his experience and just want you to be safe and protected.
Yeah. Because he knew there was a lot of crazy and bad people in the world. And I think if my dad ever knew that I had almost been kidnapped, he probably would have went and found the car and would have taken care of the situation. So I knew what I could share and what I couldn't share, and there's not a doubt in my mind that if anything had happened that day, that my dad would not have found a way to get to me.
He wanted to protect his little girl.
So
did you, like, with the powwows, like, was that brought into the home as well, the Native culture and the importance and the history?
So English was not my first language. I spoke German first before English. Culture and language was a huge part of my home. But the Japanese and Korean culture was more than the Native culture. Both of my parents are Native or part Native, and both of them were told growing up, don't ever forget your Native, but they were told to claim white as a means to be able to get a job. And my dad's mom, you can't find her on the census. She doesn't exist. 1920s, 1930s, 1940s, she was not even listed as a woman in the home because she refused to denounce. So I knew growing up certain things, but my grandmother's name changed at least three times and every single name. So the name that I was told, couldn't find. Then I did a combination of her. So then my dad reminded me that his grandfather had told him that he's Native. Well, I always thought it was my grandmother's dad, and it wasn't. It was his dad's dad. And the last name that I grew up with was Cox. So I am, every male in the family had William either as their first name or as their middle name. So I thought they were like Will Cox. Mm-hmm. You know, they had taken the William and made it their middle name. Come to find out, that wasn't even our real last name. My dad's grandfather changed our name so that he wouldn't be recognized as Native and could get work. Oh, he was actually, when he was trying to work, it was easier to be Black than Native. And you know how bad it was during the Civil Rights and before the Civil Rights. So you think 1900s, if a man is willing to change his name and change his identity and claim white, but tells his family, just remember you're Native.
Yeah.
There was strong persecution against Natives back then. But still to this day, my grandmother doesn't exist. Like, you can't find her.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, my grandmother was full-blooded Blackfoot and Cherokee. And grandfather's side was Blackfoot, but he claimed white. My grandmother refused to denounce. That's why they can't find her.
But, you know, good for her for standing so strong.
Yeah. And my dad, I mean, he would go out in the sun, and I know I look kind of pale, but I tan really easy if I'm out in the sun. I'm under fluorescence all day, every day, so I don't get to be as glorious dark as I want to be.
Right.
But my dad, like, if he went outside for anything, he would be really, really dark.
That's so cool. When my grandpa was a baby and his dad, my great-grandpa, came here on Germany from a boat, and my mom did research on the family and found where they came up from Louisiana and stayed with Native Americans in Oklahoma. And apparently the tribe was fascinated with my grandpa because he looked just like their babies, except he had blue eyes. And so my dad was always like fascinated with Native culture, and he would get really dark and he would come in and be so proud. He's like, look at this. Like, that was to
him. Blue eyes and hazel eyes is actually a Cherokee feature.
Oh, really?
It could have been. Yeah. It could have been.
Yeah.
Because my eyes are hazel.
So when you're talking about that, the skin color, that was my dad's badge of honor because he was a farmer. So he was out in the sun all the time because he was like, I get to look like that. Like, to him, it was prideful. And we have a trail through the farm where he would find various artifacts, and like, nothing made him more happy than to bring those, you know, and talk about, hi, puppy.
She's trying to get my dinner.
Well, it probably smells delicious.
She's like, I don't know why she's holding me. This is not what I want.
It's a distraction from the food. So yeah, I love that. I love hearing stories like that. So after high school, where did life lead you?
After high school, I went to Jacksonville State University to study deaf education in Jacksonville, Alabama. And lived there for 4.5 years, then moved back here to Tennessee. I've been a sign language interpreter since I was a freshman in college.
Wow. Got
national certification. I hold 2 national certifications in interpreting for the deaf and hard of hearing, and a bachelor's degree in special ed. I originally went to college for deaf education, and they closed my program in my 4.5 year. The bachelor program for deaf education was a 5-year minimum program. And in my 4th year, the dean of the college left, and we were like 0.25%. I mean, not even a whole percentage, not meeting graduation requirements, so they just decided not to hire a new dean for deaf education. So we were like in limbo for 6 months, and then I had to I transferred back to Tennessee so I could finish my degree, and I got a special ed degree with a minor in English.
Wow.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Sharon gives us a behind-the-scenes look at what it is like to be a sign language interpreter. Imagine walking waist-deep in a field of flowers while taking in an endless view of beautiful blue sky and clouds. Stargazer Farms WI is located in northwestern Wisconsin, offering flowers, vegetables, special events, and more. From stargazing parties to bridal flower parties, flower bars, bridal flower buckets, and a variety of special events like brunch on the farm. Take a moment to escape from the chaos of life. Take a breath on a quiet farm where the breeze can clear your head and the peace can cleanse your soul. Come find a sense of peace and calm at Stargazer Farms. Come for the flowers. Stay for the stars. To find out more, go to www.stargazerfarmswi.com. And for long-form content, check out their YouTube channel at Stargazer Farms WI. One moment you're watching them waver while they walk. Then the next thing you know, they're 18 and walking away, all grown up. 18 years felt like 18 minutes. Don't let those fleeting moments get lost. Take time to book your memories with Girl Boss Photography. Girl Boss Photography offers three different packages to meet your needs. The ultimate senior session will make you feel as special as you deserve. Be treated like a princess with hair and makeup, fully guided photo session, behind-the-scenes photos and videos that will create a day that you'll never forget. In the ultimate senior session, we capture the special time in your life with a memory keepsake video. This video will be cherished for years and can be shared with friends and family over and over again. Don't let your senior year go without experiencing the ultimate senior session with Girl Boss Photography. To find out more, go to www.girlbossphotography.com and get your photo session booked today. Welcome back to Journey to the Rise. We continue our conversation with Sharon, and she talks about the challenges she faced with self-publishing.
So what kind of career path can you have as a sign language interpreter?
I've interpreted everything from medical to legal to going into the IRS and going into the reserve. You can go anywhere as a sign language interpreter, especially a certified interpreter. Because we're bound by confidentiality. We have to follow HIPAA guidelines. We have to, you know, I've worked in a wide variety. And as a staff interpreter, that I did that for 5.5 years, I would, you know, anytime I had the emergency pager, I got called at 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and go and interpret in 16 counties in Middle Tennessee and 5 in Southern Kentucky.
16 counties?
16 counties.
Holy cow.
Yep. 2 in the morning, you know, get a call to go 2.5 hours away. It wasn't unheard of. And it could range from a gunshot wound to a car crash to a woman having a baby.
Yep. Oh, wow. So you have seen everything.
Yes. Yeah, pretty much. I've interpreted.
Go ahead.
I've interpreted in mental health settings where they have lockdown and you have to have a badge on to distinguish you from your clientele, to the point that they take your shoes because it has shoe strings, and you take your purse and lock it up. So if you don't have a badge, you could end up staying the night.
Oh my gosh.
I've gotten out of my car going into a situation, and this isn't just in Tennessee because I lived in Alabama. I've lived in Georgia. So I've interpreted in a lot of different states and a lot of settings, and have even contracted with other states. So when I talk about, you know, getting out of my car, it doesn't mean it happened here. But I'll never forget, I got out of my car to do a home visit for interpreting, and gunshots started going off in the area that I was at. And my client come running out and said, "Girl, you better get in here. It ain't safe for you." I said, "Really? Is that why I'm hearing gunshot?" And she's like, "You hear it?" And I was like, "Yes." Because she couldn't. She was like, "Oh, you can hear that?" And I was like, "Yeah." So.
Oh my gosh. Wow, that's fascinating. I have wondered what kind of careers, especially when, like the big stadium concerts and the comedians bring in interpreters to, you know, and like that to me has brought an awareness of one, it still exists because you don't hear of it. And two, to me, the performer who makes sure that's happening at their venues and performances, I think speaks volumes for the care they have towards their fan base.
Yes. Yeah.
But that's fascinating.
And you'd be surprised how many doctors, lawyers, judges still don't want to provide that service.
Really?
Because they have to pay for it.
Well, yeah.
So my first husband was deaf, and when I gave birth to my son, I had an interpreter, and the hospital that we were going to have our child at wanted us to use their list of five. So we were like, we'll give them a chance. We'll call them, but they have to be a qualified interpreter. If they're not certified, they have to be qualified. Mm-hmm. And so three on the list hadn't signed in over 15 years.
What?
So they were off the list. We called one and she goes, "All I know is how to finger spell." So the example of that would be like spelling every word that you say.
Right.
I-A-M-G-O-I-N-G 2-O. So by the time she finger spelled, the baby's head is coming.
Of course.
The baby would have already been there. And I was like, No,
I'm qualified. Crowning.
Right. And oh, she hadn't signed in a while, so it's probably going to be more like
thanks. So I'm not good, but I'm even a little faster than that.
Right.
Goodness
and
gracious.
So then the last one on the list said, "Well, that's fine, I don't mind doing it, but you're going to have to follow my schedule." Last time I checked,
what?
Like, babies don't like follow your schedule, and they're going to come when they come. So we called the hospital back and we said, "Absolutely not. Not happening." They got us a certified interpreter, and she was there through the birthing classes. She was there through the actual labor, the circumcision. Wow. And then the hospital didn't want to pay the agency. It took them several months to get payment. And, you know, here we are, a young married couple with a new baby. We couldn't have paid for it, but it wasn't our responsibility. It was the hospital's responsibility.
Right.
So.
Wow.
Yeah.
So like, what does it take to be certified?
To become certified, it's like getting a degree. Have to take an initial writing test. So it's similar to what teachers have to take, like a praxis, to get their teaching certification. But a teacher is state to state. I'm nationally certified. So what it entailed is I had to take a written test that was several hours long. And then once I passed that, then I would go to a super center or a center where they had assessors. So I would go into a room. So the first one, NAD, they put me in a room for an hour and a half and showed me some videos so that I could get used to the people's sign style. And they gave me topics such as like NAACP and gun control. but it's to learn their sign style. And then they pull you out into a room and you have a videotape on you, a video camera on you, and then you get to see the same people, but the topic is different and you have to interpret for them cold. So then you're videotaped and it's sent nationwide to different deaf and hard of hearing individuals, and they rate you based on your skill level to see if you're qualified or not.
Oh, wow.
And so that was the first one. And then registry interpreter for the deaf and hard of hearing. Similar, you know, you had a test, but then you went before a panel. And they would, in front of you, you would have a variety of deaf and hard of hearing individuals, and how they signed, you had to sign back. And you had an interpreter behind you and a video camera on you. And the interpreter was signing everything that I was saying, like if I was voicing for them. So again, you're recorded and then it's sent out nationwide again, and they rate you based on that. But you also have the panel. And I got that backwards. That was NAD who did the panel. RID was the cold video. But two videotapes, you know, and you're recorded both ways, and then it's sent out to the deaf population and hard of hearing population, and they rate your fate.
Wow. That's a little intense.
Just a little bit. And I have to do, really? Yeah. I have to do 80 hours in 4 years for continuing education units to keep my certification.
Oh my gosh.
80 hours. Wow. In addition to giving back to the community, and like I teach, but none of that counts toward my CEUs. So I have to do very specific interpreter related trainings.
Wow. I had no idea the intensity behind just being an interpreter and this maintaining the certification.
And in Tennessee, we're working on state licensure. We don't have it yet, but other states do. So in addition to my certification, I would do state licensure. That would be equivalent to like a teacher being state level. The national level, it's kind of like a teacher who has their master's, or, and if legal certification, I would say is more like your PhD for an education. Wow. For people to understand the levels, kind of.
That's fascinating. That's, you could probably write a book just on that.
Yes, I could.
So when you were like 6 years old, 7 years old, is that when you first started taking an interest in writing, or when did the interest of the process of writing like come to you?
So my mom used to tell stories, and then my dad was an avid reader. So even before I could read and write, I would act like I was writing and telling stories. I started writing poetry at a very young age, and though I didn't know what it was. In third grade, I had an amazing teacher who would do story time, like on her rug. But it wasn't just story time. She would read us a book, but she would play a dulcimer before. So she introduced music to her class, and she would play a dulcimer every day. And one day she introduced us to poetry. And I remember going back to my desk and going, so this is what I've been doing. And it was just validation. And I do have poems published through literary journals, but it's just like a poem here and there. So I did have that experience with literary journals and publication that way.
Very cool. So as you're like doing your poetry and, you know, pursuing the different things you get, you know, the published, when did you realize that you wanted to become a writer and pursue that path?
When I was 8 or 9.
Wow.
I would really say 6. When I found the bone in the yard.
Yeah.
And I tried to type it up, I think part of me always wanted to be an author.
So what steps have you taken to strengthen and develop your craft as a writer?
I've attended conferences. I've attended master classes. I have done online trainings and workshops. I have worked with professional editors, illustrators. I have edited professionally. Actually, I was the editor, one of the editors for Anne Hagler's The Settling Place.
Oh, wow.
Which was a New York Times bestseller, and I am listed as one of the editors. I also hosted with Friends of the Library, Houston County Friends of the Library. We did a literary journal for students, second through 12th grade, for their creative writing and art, because we were finding that in a small town, students who are artists weren't able to get their, they didn't have enough for their portfolios. So the first year that we did just creative writing, we had over 90 entries. And for a small town of only 5,000 people, that's a big number.
That's and a very big number.
We published their work. I wrote a grant to be able to publish them. And like I said, it was second through 12th grade. And then the second year, we collaborated with the Art Council, and the Art Council judged the art, and we judged the writing. And it was
cool.
Phenomenal. We did that for 5 years. And then the fifth year, we were asked to do an adult creative writing contest. And I will tell you, I'd much rather judge children.
Really?
Because the adults are a little harsh. They're a little... How dare you tell me my work wasn't good enough? No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying you weren't first place. Right. So we did the Pot of Gold Literary Journal for 5 years, and then COVID hit. So we did the Creative Hands and Minds for 5 years, and then we did the Pot of Gold for 5 years. So I have a very extensive background in writing.
That's incredible. And I think this next question might be a little tough to answer, because I have heard, and I believe myself, that our story ideas are brought to us through different avenues. And with that said, how did the story idea for your book come to you?
For Shanghai come to me?
Yes. Yeah.
Shanghai or Midnight the Witching Hour? Shanghai. So we're talking about Shanghai, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, Shanghai Sunset came to me purely by accident.
Really?
Yes, it did. I was running late to work one day, and I had called my boss. Okay, I had a military father, so you were never late. You were always early. In fact, the motto was, you hurry up and wait.
Yes, ma'am.
So, you can be 30 minutes early. Do not make somebody wait on you. So I am frantic trying to get to work. I've called my boss. I've let my boss know, hey, I'm running late. I will be there. I told you I live in rural Tennessee. And I thought I was going to cut off and go, you know, a back road at 6:30 in the morning in the country is never a good idea, because you're going to get behind a tractor.
Of course.
A work truck. Yes. Or animals. So that morning I got behind an old farm truck that was in nobody's hurry, especially not mine. And I was like, and every time I try to pass, I couldn't pass because here'd come a tractor or a car. So I finally just said, okay, wait, you know what? I've already called my boss. My boss knows I'm running late. And I got to looking at the scenery, and I noticed on the back of that truck, there was a motorcycle. And I had the thought of, I wonder if I could get that bike off the back of that truck without laying it down. And if not, who could? And that's when the image of Breeze came to me.
Oh, wow.
I knew She was a 17-year-old mixed martial artist with a dragon tattoo who raced motorcycles, and she had sassy red short hair, and she was just full of personality. That's all I knew about the character. I didn't know her name. I just knew those things. So I finally could get around the track, was on my way to work, and I could not shake the image of this woman. And I pulled over and I jotted down really just six things. Female, 17-year-old, MMA, motorcycle, red dragon tattoo, sassy. That was it. That's all I had. And I went to work and I could not shake the image of this character. And I said, so who are you? I'm typing. Yeah. I'm working at my desk. And I hear the faintest. And I was like, oh, yeah, you are. And by that one word, I knew her first, middle, and last name. I knew who her best friend was. I knew who her parents were. And this world evolved. And that day on my lunch hour was the first day that I sat down and started writing briefs.
Oh, wow.
And that was 16 years ago. So she's definitely evolved and changed and but who she is, I changed her from 17 to 18 as the story goes, because of content.
Oh, sure.
I had an editor tell me that young adults don't have sex. And I'm like, have you been to high school lately? Have you been to middle school? I don't know what rock you're under, but okay.
Right.
So to appease editors and agents, I made her 18, but she turns 18 in the hospital. So
nice. So what was the process like for you to develop these characters?
Long. yeah. Breeze would not, once Breeze came to mind, she would not let me sleep. She would wake me up in the middle of the night to tell me something. So my characters always talk to me, and I know we've talked as writers about the differences that writers experience. You know, some have images that just come to them like a movie reel, mm-hmm. or others see like a picture and a word. Mine have conversations and like full on, like I've had characters yell at me and tell me to do it their way, or they would find somebody else to do it. Okay, like, you're in my head. Like, shut up. but Breeze made it very clear early on that she had a story to tell, and it was my job to tell it.
Oh, that's amazing. And
so in 2020, I had a stroke, and I couldn't write fresh. At that point, I could edit and revise. And it was one of my secondary characters that broke through 9 months after I had my stroke. Like, oh, wow. I really could not write. The silence in my head was unnerving. Do not ever tell a neurologist, by the way. The voices in my head have stopped because they literally start looking at psychotic medication. And I'm like, no. I'm a writer. And then they look at you and go,
Right. That's normal for me.
And I'm like, okay, note to self, what not to do. Do not tell the neurologist the silence in your head is unnerving, or that you hear voices. Because right. either way, you may get a little white jacket. So I was actually driving to work in Nashville to interpret for Sorensen Video Relay, and I was becoming very frustrated with the silence and not hearing my characters. And one of my characters in Shanghai Sunset came to me, and it was Mickey, and he said, "Kid gets his own story, why don't I get mine?" And oh. the tears of joy that I felt, yeah. because that was my first break of being able to hear my characters again. And then the dam opened, and the rest is history. But
That's awesome. Yeah. They kind of saved you.
They did. They did.
That's so beautiful.
Now, Shanghai Sunset was already written, but Mickey wanted his own story, and I have made notes for his story. But then he stops talking to me, and I'm like, do you want your own story or not? Come on, you got to give me something. And I keep getting when the time comes. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So throughout this duration of writing this book, like just the writing process, like what has that been like for you? Because you've said this has evolved and changed. And
So Shanghai Sunset is the first in this series, and it's The Great Adventures of Breeze Lee. And like I said, Shanghai Sunset is book one. It's been a journey. I tried traditional for 14, 15 years.
Wow.
It wasn't until I went to the Killer Nashville conference in 2024 that I met with an agent who gave me just a small piece of advice that if I had heard 15 years ago, I could have made it a much stronger book early on. But I went through all the query letters and submitting to agents and editors and publishers and following their guidelines and waiting the time period. And it's exhausting. You wait 3 months to get a form letter that says you're rejected. Mm-hmm. I used to keep all my rejection letters. And then I decided I could wallpaper a house with it, and I don't need that negativity. And I took them out and burned them.
Good for you.
Yeah. Don't save all your rejection letters. Don't do it. It's just negativity.
Yeah.
But every great author has been rejected. I mean, mm-hmm. C.S. Lewis was rejected over 310 times.
Wow. I know
Dr. Seuss was rejected like 97 times. Yeah, so all of the great authors were rejected. And the first time I got a rejection letter was for a children's story. And I knew I would get rejected. I knew it. You know, it's the nature of the beast. And I had even told my husband at the time, I'm sure that's a rejection letter. It's fine. I'll be okay. And then when I opened it, the floodgates just opened. I was bawling and boohooing, and I was a snotty mess. And he looked at me and he goes, I thought you said you were okay. Like, and I was like, I am, it's still my baby. And
yeah. Yeah.
He never got it ever. But now my current husband, he gets it.
Nice. And this conference really changed the trajectory of your publishing journey. So like, what happened? What was the interaction?
So I sat down with this literary agent. He was not only an agent, he was a movie producer. And he didn't even have my manuscript in front of him. He read it, but he didn't have it with him. So he was like, and he started talking to me about my manuscript without it being in front of him. And his first words to me were, I read it twice.
Oh, wow.
And I was taking notes and I looked up and he goes, I read it twice. He said it again. And I said, I put my pencil down and I made eye contact with him. And he said, it's good. Don't change it. He said, if you don't get a literary agent in the next 6 months, do it yourself. He said, life's too short. Do it yourself. He said, tighten it up a little bit, bring Breeze back to the forefront, introduce her friends slowly, but do not rewrite it. He goes, did you hear me? Do not rewrite it. And I'm making notes. And he said, life is too short. He said, I'm old. He goes, I'm not waiting for a traditional publisher to publish my stuff. He goes, I'm going to do it myself. And his wife or assistant was with him. I think it was his wife. And she was frantic because he didn't have my manuscript in front of him. And he goes, I don't need it. And she goes, I'm going up to the room. I've got to find it. I've got to find it. And like we're talking and it was supposed to be a 20 minute session and it was 45 minutes and he started it with, yeah.
That's unheard
of. And he started it with, I read it twice. And he ended with, I read it twice. And I'm telling you, do not rewrite it. And it was life changing for me. He gave that just that little bit of feedback of tight knit breeze. You end with a fight. There's tragedy in the middle. You want the action up front. And that's, I went home from that conference and I was in the shower on Labor Day. And the first 10 pages came to me. 16 years, everything else had been there. It had been rewritten, edited, revised, has been to three professional editors and back again. But the first 10 pages I wrote literally in the shower. It came to me and it was all because of him. And I will say Killer Nashville was probably one of the best things that's ever happened to me. It placed in the top 10 in 2023. And I thought, oh, top 10, you know, great. Maybe 100, maybe 150, 300 at most. No. They have 350 judges nationwide, worldwide, because I got to meet some of the judges for the 2024 contest. They were from Australia, New Zealand, England, and they were reading 50 manuscripts apiece.
Holy cow.
That is an astronomical amount. And there's like 16 categories. So I made the top 10 of action adventure, and what a huge honor to make it to the top 10. I mean, I was honored when I found out I made the top 10 in the first place, but then to find out it was at that caliber, that was huge. And when I made the top 10 in 2023, I didn't get to go, for financial reasons. In 2024, I said, I'm going. I don't care what the cost is. I don't care what I have to do to get there. And it was absolutely by far the best thing I could have done for myself as a writer.
That's amazing. I've heard incredible things about that particular conference, and I'm so glad that you went. And clearly it was fate. Like, you were meant to go when you went to, so that you ran into that gentleman.
Yes.
Yeah. And so you get this advice from him, and then what happened? Like, did you pursue the traditional publishing as he advised? Like, what was...
Well, I've been pursuing the traditional publishing for 15 years.
Right.
I entered a couple of more contests. It actually made it recently into Chanticleer shortlist, which is another big contest. It's in Washington State. And I was ready to launch when I found out I made the shortlist, and I pulled back because they offer a traditional publication if they will promote you and try to get you a traditional publication.
Sure.
So I pulled back, and then when I didn't make semifinals, I moved forward. But from August of 2024, Killer Nashville is at the end of August. So from September to February, I learned everything I could about independent publishing. I launched a website, created a logo with my cover designer, registered it with the state. I learned all about copyright, barcoding, everything that you have to do independently. I learned it, and I learned it hard and fast because I published a much smaller book in December so that I could learn the ins and outs of independent publishing.
Yeah.
Wow. It is a lot. And I actually told another writing friend the other day, I was like, if I have to learn one more software or one more program, right. I'm going to throw myself on the floor and have a tantrum. And it is ever changing, and everything that you would have had done by a traditional publisher, you're having to do it yourself.
Right.
My advice would be, don't shortcut it and just put it out there, because people are going to be able to tell the difference.
Mm-hmm.
I did it, you know, I did my logo. I registered it with the state of Tennessee. Copyright, barcoding. Copyright and barcoding is the only way that you can technically get into a brick and mortar store, and is also the only way you can get into a library. Right. Supposed to be. So Library of Congress, like all of my books will be through the Library of Congress with the copyright. I get ISBNs, mm-hmm. my own personal ISBNs for my books. I also barcode them. I get professional editors to edit my books. It's not cheap, and it's not for the faint of heart.
Right.
You know, because traditionally publishing, you have that editor and that agent. And yes, they're doing all this for you, and you can focus more on writing. And that's one of the things that with independent publishing, I have the freedom of where I put it. I chose not to be just Amazon. I chose to be worldwide. I don't believe in putting all my eggs in one basket.
Mm-hmm.
Again, having a military father that taught me that.
Right.
But you never know. Like, Amazon could crash tomorrow, and then sure. Where's my book? Right. It's a journey. And like I said, from August to December, I learned the ins and outs of independent publishing. And thank goodness I had been to conferences and met other authors and other independent authors, and they could help with that journey. Cause I think if I had to do this all alone, I would still be trying to do it.
Yeah. It's a daunting hill to climb. To say yes, the least.
Let's see. I had three websites that, so, you know, doing a website, you know, can take months.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I created one, my web designer created one, and then we shut them both down, and we together collaborated and made the website that I have now.
Oh, wow.
But he's also my cover artist, and he developed not only my trademark from my publishing, but he's done several others for other writers. So it's definitely been a journey. And he's a writer too. So it's not like that's all he does.
Sure. Yeah. So how did it feel to get the published copy in your hand?
Awesome. It felt, it feels surreal, because this was 16 years of my life. And I will say, the nerves, like when I clicked the button for Midnight the Witching Hour, because it was a small one, I was anxious.
Mm-hmm.
But the delays that I had with this one,
yeah,
like what could go wrong went wrong before launch. And I was so glad it happened before launch, because if it had happened like once I had released it, I think I would have had a meltdown. I would have probably had the little white jacket.
The neurologist would have been like, I knew it.
I told you. Because I don't think I could have like bounced back, but it was so surreal. And when I was so nervous that day, I was like, okay, like it's out there. It is what it is now.
Yeah.
And of course I can always change it and revise it. But I have so many more stories that are already written for Breeze. Now I just got to type them and get them out there. But
that's exciting. And now the work begins. Like, what is the process? Now you have it published. And now you're hitting the pavement to get it into people's hands. So what does that look like for you?
Well, it's, again, you know, I don't have the traditional publisher putting thousands of dollars out there. So all the copies that I have on hand are the ones that I have to pay for. But I am not one to sit around and just say, okay, this is what's going to happen. I believe in marketing. So when I decided to do independent publishing, I developed a business plan. And it was everything from the copyright and the logo, and everything was laid out. So when the book came out, I decided that I was going to start, how can I get in libraries? That was my big thing. I believe in supporting the libraries. And so I went to Draft to Digital and Kobo. Kobo and Kobo Plus partner with, I'm sorry, I was hearing banging. It's my boxer knocking at the door. Geez, I lost it. I'm sorry. That's called stroke brain. I do apologize.
Kobo, like, you're talking about Kobo and Kobo Plus.
Yes. Yeah, so Kobo and Kobo Plus, Kobo works with Overdraft, which is what's now called Libby for the public libraries, their online version where you can check out their books. So I went through not only Amazon, but then I went through Kobo, Kobo Plus, and then Draft to Digital. And Draft to Digital hits a wide audience. But my whole point of going with Kobo and Kobo Plus was to get into the libraries. So that was my first thing, was I wanted my books to be accessible to people who can't afford to buy a book. Mm-hmm. They can go to a library, they can check it out. But then I started contacting local libraries. Do you need an author? Have you ever had an author come and do a presentation? And I started partnering with other authors. And so this came out in February, and I already have four presentations lined up, book signings.
Excellent.
Yeah. So I already have an independent bookstore that's willing to buy several copies to see how they start doing. And I believe in marketing. So
absolutely.
Not just having a book, but when I do these events, I'll have free giveaways, a coffee cup with one of my characters on it, a notebook that has the book cover on the front of the notebook.
Oh, wow.
Metal bookmarks that have each of my book covers on them. And then my catchphrase and QR code for my website and or the actual website listed. So just a lot. And again, as an independent author, all of that's on me.
Right.
I haven't done Shopify yet. That's another program I have to learn. And I'm just not there.
Right. I'm just not there. And what genre, like if someone's hearing about Shanghai Sunset, like what genre would you classify this?
Supernatural suspense. And new age, definitely, because she is 17 going to 18.
And often with writers, as they finish one book, you know, some take off a little time and others dive right into the next one. Where are you in this whirlwind?
I'm not taking time off. I work a full-time job and I work a part-time job. Right. And I sleep very little. So I get up at 4:30 in the morning and I'm either editing or writing at 4:30 in the morning. And I'm going till about 11 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. I still go on my lunch hour and write, but Shanghai Sunset coming out in February of 2025. And I'm hoping to release two other books, possibly three, before the end of 2025.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
Thanks. And they are different. They're not part of the Shanghai Sunset series. Well, the two of them are not. One of them will be. a before Chicago Sunset.
Yes. Intrigue. Very exciting. And where can people get a copy of this book?
You can get it on Amazon, Kobo, anywhere that you can get a book online. It is available. You can also get it at Barnes & Noble and Books A Million online.
My gosh.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
It's very
exciting. Proud of you. That's really exciting.
Thank you. Thank you. A lot of hard work. 16 years are in this book.
And so what's, you have other books coming out. Like, what is ahead of you for this upcoming year? It just sounds like there's a lot in the pipeline.
There is, absolutely. I have, like I said, the 4 presentations coming, and that's all before June 6th. I will be attending Killer Nashville again this year. I'm entering several contests. And, I have Shanghai Sunset has been submitted to independent, contest for independent published books. I've entered 2 of those already. I'm entering another contest, by the end of March for one of my other stories. And I'm just going to hit it hard. Like, if you don't use it, you lose it.
Right.
So to keep the craft going, I continuously write and edit and revise. And I have a book with an editor right now that I hope to have out by June. So once I get it back from the editor, I start making the revisions. Then I've got to send it to the Library of Congress to get the copyright. That can take a month to 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can start the release process.
Wow. That's amazing. And you have a newsletter.
I do.
And people sign up for that through your website. So like someone wants to sign up for your website, get your book, like where can they find you? What's their website? Like all the good things.
So you can go to sharonabarnes.com, and that's sharonabarnes.com. And on my website, you can click subscribe to the newsletter there. And there's also a blog on there and upcoming events. And really, that's the best way to reach me. You can also find me on Twitter at S Barnes author, and then Facebook would just be Sharon Barnes, and I'm not on any other social media sites because I don't have time.
Right.
I need to write. I only sleep about 4 hours a night, so what little sleep I get, I kind of would like to keep getting that. And if I have to learn another social media platform, that's when the tantrum's gonna happen.
I completely understand. Well, I'm just thrilled for you. Like, this is amazing. Thank you for coming on here and talking about your book. I wish you the best of luck with the success of this. I'm honored to have my very own signed copy. I feel like a spoiled princess. And I'm so thrilled for you. Like, this has been a long journey. I remember you when I met you at a writer's conference, the excitement of this book, when I got the first little snippet peek of it, I wanted more. And now I have more. And I'm thrilled. And I'm so proud of you. And I can't wait to see where this takes you.
Thank you. I do want to say about Shanghai Sunset, it is fast-paced, it's action-adventure. But there are some very real topics in this book. Domestic violence, depression, anxiety, because even the best of the best can fall. And Breeze is one of the best of the best. And you would never think that domestic violence would happen to her, but it does. And it's her journey for survival. And if she didn't have her friends, where would she have been? So her friends are her lifeline. And But there are real topics in here that I address. And I just want to say, if it gets one person out of a bad situation, then it was worth it.
I just got goosebumps. I'm not even kidding as you talked about that. And that's what I'm so thankful for you to not be afraid to touch on those topics, because they are hard conversations, but they are real life. And you took them on head on.
I did. Even when I had a literary agent tell me that guys and girls can't be just friends. And I was like, I call bull, because four of my best friends are guys, and we were not sexual. So thank you.
Right.
And then he tried to tell me that domestic violence did not happen in young women at the age of 17.
What?
16, 17. And I said, you need to get out from under your rock, because statistically 16 and 17 year old girls are prime victims for domestic violence and control. And I am a survivor of domestic violence, and I was 17. So I can say from life experience, it does happen.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically shot me down. And I remember walking out of that conference and thinking, well, that was the worst $45 I've ever paid. And I hope I never see him again, because he was just a horse's ass.
Yeah.
But now I can look at him and go, ha, ha, ha.
Right? Here it is. Mother effer.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? And share the story.
Right.
And change lives. Because of your willingness to bring up and talk about that, that is life changing for someone out there. And those are the kind of authors we need in this world.
I am not one that's going to shy away. And so I will say, if you don't like violence, you don't like fast pace, you don't like cussing, then don't read my books. But if you like fast pace, if you like real world issues, and you don't mind the F-bomb every now and then, definitely pick up one of my books.
If you want a book, and I will say, just for, again, she has probably made many changes since a little snippet I got to read quite some time ago. I couldn't wait for more. Like, even if it's not your cup of tea, it's worth giving a shot. Like, pour it in the cup and sit down with it, because I have a feeling once you fall in love with this character, and it's really hard not to because she's extraordinary, you're going to want to turn that page, because that page with her writing is going to suck you in. I'm just saying.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yes, it's very true.
So she's definitely my blood, sweat, and tears.
Yeah.
Definitely my blood, sweat, and tears.
She did you proud, and you did her proud.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
She's still got more to say, but this is book one. And I will say, if you go to sleep on one of my books, I'm doing something wrong, because I try to get you going like the second you hit the page.
Yeah. The kind where you put that bookmark in and you're like, I don't want to go to sleep, even though I need to go to sleep.
Yep, that's my goal. Yeah. I hope you get as little sleep as I do. When I hope my characters talk to you. And I will say, my son read this. Now, he's an avid reader. And he saw an image on my computer of another character, which is for the book that I'm working on, one of the before books. And he said, who is that? What story is that? And I said, oh, that's kid's story. And he looked at me and he goes, that's not kid. And I'm like,
oh,
that's my character. He goes, he's a mechanic, not a skateboarder. That's not kid. Well, and I said,
okay.
I said, that's a younger kid. And he was a skateboarder. And he goes, that's not him. I don't know who that is, but that's not kid. And like, I looked at him and I'm like, he is my character. Okay. So tell me, how do you see kid? And he goes, I don't know, but that ain't him. And he turned and walked away. Now my son is 26. So I'm like, okay, hey, come back. tell me how you see Kid.
Yeah.
And I thought about it and I thought, you know what? I'm really proud that he has this vision of what he thinks this character is.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I've done my job as an author. Like, exactly. He sees somebody in his mind.
Yep.
And it's funny because one of my beta readers saw the cover. She was one of my very first beta readers. She trudged through with me. And she saw the cover and she goes, that's not exactly how I had Breeze pictured, but that's a good one. And I'm like, cool. How did you see Breeze? She couldn't tell me, but yeah. I was like, okay. And she goes, now that I see this, like totally, I get it, but that's not how I envision Breeze. So for me, having somebody read my work and have that vision in their mind,
right?
I want to hear about it. I want to hear what you think a character looks like. Tell me.
Yeah.
Because that may spark me to write another book. You never know.
I like that idea. So there it is. Get on her website. Send her an email of who you think these characters are. More books to come.
And I will tell you, for anybody who signs up for my newsletter, I will be doing a drawing from this podcast.
Ooh.
So one lucky winner will get a free copy of both books, and they will get a prize to go with it. So what? Just make sure you put on there that you heard about this book, Shanghai Sunset, yes, from Lucretia and her podcast.
Boop, boop, Journey to the Rise, y'all. That's exciting. I appreciate that. Yes. And we have listeners from literally all over the world. So I'm curious who will, be diving in, because
I would love to be able to send a prize overseas. Come on, what an honor for an author.
We have listeners in Greece, Belgium, Italy, Australia. I can't even keep up. It's really exciting when I check the stats for the listeners on this, but I'm thrilled for you. I will get your website, your social, that will go in the show notes. And
you can have my social media, but you can't have my social security number. I'm sorry. I'm not sharing that. Social media.
Yes.
I know. Let
me be more specific. but I'll get that all in the show notes when we get this loaded. And I'm just thrilled for you. And congratulations.
Thank you. And thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. And I'm sorry if we took up more time than you intended.
No, this is perfect. No, this is great. Okay. Yes. Awesome. Great. Well, I appreciate you.
Thank you.
For those of you listening, what you couldn't see at the end of this conversation is she had signed thank you, which I thought was really fun. And I also wanted to share a little behind the scenes clip. I was having technical issues going into this episode. I ran into a technical issue in the middle of it. And I just have to share because you don't get to see the side of, or hear the side of the podcast. So here's a little bit from the blooper reel. Nice. All right. I have to plug in my laptop. Hang on. I'm so sorry.
You're good. You're not getting my food. You're not. I'm going to put you out. Don't get sassy. I'll put you outside. I'll put you out of the room. You're not getting it. You're not getting it. Stop it. No.
So in the past, my laptop has been able to make it, but
that's my dog.
I'm like, now what did I do? I'm like, how?
That's my dog. She's giving me attitude. Okay. Like, when as soon as you stepped off screen, she started and started pawing at me. So, like, you'll see me, like, playing with her and, like, you're not getting it. You're not getting
it. I was like, what did I hit? I'm like, come on. Okay. All right. So we're plugged in. We're good. Everyone's happy. All right. That's it with Sharon Barnes, author of Shanghai Sunset. Next week, we talk with woodworker and YouTuber Alexander Loretto, known as the Blessed Carpenter.
Like all the counseling and all the anger management and all the everything, it says it's all the same thing. It says you just have to be honest and face your truth and let people know the truth. So that way they don't trigger you and you don't react, because everybody has emotions and you can't control your emotions, but how you react to your emotions is how, like, I know all the shit, all the bull crap, but like, I'm still not happy. Mm-hmm. And like, it's making me happy finding my community and finding my people and actually talking to people again, because what's happening.
Hey, thanks for listening to Journey to the Rise. Please do follow us on your podcast app so you have the latest episode downloaded. If you want to follow us on Instagram or Facebook, our account is at Journey to the Rise Podcast. Remember to be kind to yourself. Fill your cup with love, because it makes it easier to be kind to others. This episode was researched, produced, and edited by Girl Boss Productions. I'm Lucretia, and you've been listening to Journey to the Rise.